Today's episode is brought to you by Caviar, an easy way to order meals from the best local restaurants across the U.S. For more information, visit trycaviar.com or download their free mobile app for iOS and Android.
Tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. Hi there. You're listening to Pineapple Radio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. in Adams Morgan. I'm your host, Atara.
And I'm your other host, Ariel. And we are the co-founders of Pineapple Collaborative, a community for all women who love food. We host events in DC, San Francisco, and New York once a month. We have awesome digital content on email and our website. We're very active on social media. And we also have this podcast, which we produce out of the Line Hotel.
Yeah, so follow us on all the places. We're Pineapple Collaborative on Instagram. You can sign up for our newsletter, which is awesome, I believe, by heading to pineapplecollaborative.com/join. And you can look at all of our content online as well.
Alrighty. So this episode is brought to you by Caviar, which is an amazing delivery company that is based, they have operations here in DC, New York, San Francisco, and cities across the country. And we're lucky to call them a partner in Pineapple. And we are super excited to share that we have a collection on Caviar here in Washington, D.C. It's Pineapple's Pine Fork Collection. So, Atara, what does it include?
Yeah, essentially, it's 19 of some of our favorite woman-powered restaurants here in D.C. So that's restaurants that are owned by women or powered by women in some meaningful way. Women are, you know, running back of house, front of house, operations, marketing, etc. And it's a really cool way for diners to support some of their favorite women-powered businesses in the city. It's very transparent, it's easy, and it's a really great way to invest your dollars in a cause that you care about.
Yeah, so our pick this week from the Pine Fork collection is Pear Plum Cafe. It is the sister cafe to Each Peach Market in the Mount Pleasant neighborhood of Washington, D.C., owned by Emily Friedberg. And because this episode is all about grains and baking bread and other delicious things with heirloom heritage grains, we're thinking about what pairs perfectly with amazing bread. And Pear Plum has the best like cheese and charcuterie and spread collection that you can order from Caviar that would go amazingly well with any kind of whole grain bread.
You can actually order an entire platter, and it's fantastic. If you have like book club meetups or a party, it's like the best thing ever to order.
So head to trycaviar.com and check out the Pine Fork collection. And you can use the code PINEAPPLE for free delivery. So today, we have a very special guest who's with us all the way from New York. We have Sarah Owens. Hi.
Hi, Sarah. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Welcome to our nation's capital. Mm-hmm. I last saw you actually here. You were doing a fermentation class at the U.S. Botanic Gardens.
Yes.
Which was incredible to be amongst the flora.
It's a great setting.
And learning all about starters and fermentation.
Yeah, it was one of the most wonderful settings that I could do that sort of thing in, because there is such a connection between the plant world and the microbial world. So it was perfect. Totally. I'm glad you could be there.
It was a dream. So very lucky to have you on radio. And we're going to introduce you in just a few moments. But before we do something every week that we have a radio show called our Pine Four Picks. And essentially, we talk about our favorite items in our pantry because one of our key editorial series is called Pine Four Pantry, where we peek into the kitchens of women we admire. because at Pineapple, for so many of us, our kitchens are a better reflection of our style, identity, and values, more so than, you know, our closets or our beauty cabinets. So it's so fun for us to, you know, go to the homes of women like yourself and see, yeah, like, oh, what is in her fridge? What's mm-hmm. in her cupboard? So hopefully we can do that with you too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. My fridge right now is kind of out of control, but
not to put you on the spot, but yeah, we can talk about that yeah. later.
Yes, exactly.
Atara, what's your pantry pick of the week?
I have been tasting a lot of apple cider vinegar lately because I love it and I use it on everything with everything. I've really been loving the Keep Well Vinegar York Imperial Apple Vinegar. It's made with wild foraged apples. It is super like tart and delicious and yeah, it's really great in salad dressings. I like take a little shot of it in the morning sometimes when I feel a little like I need some acid in my body. And it is, Keep Well is a company founded by our two friends, Isaiah and Sarah. They ran a pastry programs at Woodbury Kitchen, the Dabney, and then they started this awesome vinegar company and we pine for them.
Cool.
What about you, Ariel?
So I was just in Amagansett, New York, which is on Long Island, and I visited Amber Waves Farm, which is a 10-acre farm run by two women. And she stone milled on the spot some wheat berries for me into flour.
Lucky you.
I know. So I was totally going to ask you today, what should I do with this amazing flour?
Ideas.
I actually really want to make crackers. I feel like this is the one pantry item that really killed. Like, I hate buying crackers at the store because I feel like you get so little. Questionable if they're tasty or not, and I would just like to make my own. I feel like,
and they're expensive,
so expensive.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And there's all the packaging,
and then there's all the packaging. Mm-hmm. So that stone milled flour is in my kitchen, and I'm trying to make crackers this weekend.
Oh,
I'm trying to eat some of those crackers. Yeah. So let me know.
So speaking of beautiful baked goods and breads with whole grain flour, we have Sarah Owens in the house. And she is a New York City-based cookbook author, baker, gardener, and instructor. Casually, she's a James Beard Award winner for her first book, Sourdough, and released her second book, Toast and Jam, both with Roost Books. They're on our bookshelves. We love them so much.
They're sitting on our table right now.
Sitting on our table right now here in the studio. And she just finished her third book's manuscript, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Which we're going to hear about in a second. And, you know, when she's not writing books, she curates private dining events, you know, public pop-up dinners, baking classes, and preservation workshops globally and in Rockaway at BK17 Bakery?
Yeah. So I'm actually kind of in the middle of rebranding.
Okay.
But for right now, it's BK17 Bakery. And I will eventually, actually this month, launch Ritual Fine Foods.
Amazing.
Ooh. Yeah. So I'm kind of expanding on the bakery concept to include some things that are a little more shelf stable and also some whole grain cookies.
Ooh. Oh my gosh. Very excited about that.
Yeah.
So can you tell us, you know, about your current work? We just gave the rundown, but in your own words, like, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. So I, by training, professional training, am a horticulturist. And so that actually came after a career in ceramics. So I've always sort of had my hands in some sort of malleable medium. And I moved to New York to go back to school for horticulture. And that was at the New York Botanical Garden. They have a 27-month program. And that's where I learned all things plants and was hired at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden to curate their collection of roses. So that is a pretty extensive collection of heirloom roses as well as modern hybrids. So I've always had this very strong interest in sort of the history of things and how that can give perspective to how, you know, plants or different types of foods can be used in a modern context. And so that is when, during my time at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, is when I started baking. And from there, I started writing cookbooks, mm-hmm. and then eventually resigned from my position there and ended up doing a lot of baking. So I kind of split my time now between production-style baking, teaching workshops, and writing cookbooks.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Cool.
And you talk in your interviews about how inspired you are by the women in your family. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about how you grew up around food and how that influenced where you are today?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in a pretty rural setting in East Tennessee, sort of what we call the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains. Mm-hmm. And so I was sort of, you know, let loose. I always tell people I grew up a little feral and was able to kind of just run the fields and forests, which was a great way to grow up. But mealtime was a very important time to my family because that's when everyone who, you know, was working really hard in the garden or, you know, out in the fields or the kids that were running wild, we all came together. Especially on the weekends, my grandmother, my father's mother, would cook these huge meals that, you know, could feed 40, but maybe there was only 10 or 12 of us. And it was the time when we, you know, harvested things from the garden and always had biscuits on the table or cornbread. And it's when we all got together and we talked about what was going on in our lives or in the valley where, you know, we were. And so it was a really important time of just connection. And my mother, you know, carried on a lot of that as well. And I think more often she probably shooed me away from the kitchen. But I think there was at least that sort of tradition of people, women especially, really providing and using what was growing around us to feed ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
So it seems like as your career being in horticulture, baking, ceramics, mm-hmm. Your upbringing was very much about, you know, plants and baking and the kitchen, that
Absolutely.
Intersection, just
yeah.
given where you grew up.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were never like really separate things. It was just kind of all part of how we lived.
Yeah.
So I never thought about them as sort of being separate. Which was, you know, it was a great way to grow up, but you don't, I think, often appreciate that until you experience something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think more recently I've kind of come back around to my appreciation for growing up in that way and being connected to not just our garden, but our neighbors' gardens or, you know, what they were growing or raising, especially meat. That we weren't. And so we would, you know, trade often with our neighbors. And those relationships, I think you kind of take for granted until you don't have them.
Right. And so your first book, Sourdough, on the cover, it says, baking with whole and sprouted grains, making the most of the seasonal harvest, and healing the body through naturally fermented foods.
Mm-hmm.
These are like three sort of distinct ideas, but also very interconnected.
Absolutely.
Through your work. And I think that's one of the things that we love so much about following your work is that it's not just like delicious whole grain baked goods, but it's seasonal mm-hmm. and incorporates seasonal produce. Mm-hmm. And then the aspect of it being a healing food and
yes.
really deeply nourishing in right. ways that other baked goods perhaps are not. So mm-hmm. can you talk about your philosophy on baking?
Yeah, absolutely. This might be a long one.
Great. Let's dig in.
Yeah. I think, you know, when I started baking with sourdough, with natural leavening, I was coming to it from a place of just needing to heal my body. And I think that for so long, I thought that I was eating really well and really healthy, but I was actually eating a lot of very processed foods. And at the time, you know, I had taken this position. People laugh because they say, oh, how could a gardening position be stressful? But I had taken on this position that came with a lot of just sort of political significance within the organization. And I think I was putting a lot more stress on myself than I probably should have been. So there were a combination of different factors that, you know, I had to address, but fermentation definitely was a gateway into, I think, understanding my food choices better, mm-hmm. and how to make what I was eating more digestible and also more nutritionally dense for my body to uptake. And so I think, you know, I started from a place of, you know, just trying to wrap my head around that. And as a gardener, you're already thinking, if you're an organic gardener, you're already thinking about soil health from a microbial level. And so it wasn't too much of a leap from that to thinking about fermentation in terms of improving your gut health. So that's kind of where I started with the writing the book Sourdough. And since then, you know, our sort of choices of ingredients, especially flours, have dramatically increased. And this has just really been in the last 8 to 10 years that farmers are starting to grow grains that are either land-raised or heirloom varieties or modern hybrids that use the genetics of those in their ability to be better suited to their growing environments. And then we have these mills that are popping up, stone mills especially, that are honoring the integrity of these grains by milling them in very specific ways that maintain the integrity of the grain. So with those choices being more available, my philosophy has also sort of evolved to trying to support that, because I think it's very important to not just our body health, but also our environmental sustainability, so to speak. So that's kind of how my evolution in short form.
Love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. So I have two questions for you. The first is, you know, your philosophy on grain and bread and baking is so complex and interconnected, like Arielle said. Can you walk us through the definitions of some of the words that you use? So sure. Heritage grains, stone milled grains, whole grains,
land race grains.
Yeah. So land race is probably a good place to start, which is basically sort of a type of grain that has adapted to its local environment. So it hasn't really been manipulated in any type of way. It's just sort of, you know, if the environmental conditions are drought or heavy rains at certain times, the grains themselves have adapted to their best survival and reproduction, because that is what a plant wants to do. It wants to live and it wants to grow and it wants to reproduce. So a land-raised grain is very specific to where it was sort of evolved. And then heritage and heirloom, it's really, those are terms that are a little more generic in that technically speaking, they really apply to mostly hybrids that came about before the 1950s. So plant genetics really came onto the scene in like the early 1900s. And by the 1950s, when industrial processing really started kicking in, that's when kind of the ballgame changed. So when we talk about heritage or heirloom varieties, it's really before the serious industrialization of flour, because the hybrids needed to adapt to those new processes. We also will often talk about grains in terms of, you'll hear ancient or that sort of term kicked around, which is really more, these are kind of, you could almost think of them as pre-wheats. So these are more species of wheats like spelt or emmer or einkorn that just exist, and there are land race varieties of these as well, but they exist sort of before Triticum estivum, which is the common wheat, came onto the scene.
Awesome.
Cool. Thank you.
And the last piece is stone milled and the importance of, you know, why we should stone mill the ancient heritage land race grains.
Right. So again, it's just sort of honoring the integrity of the grain.
Yeah.
And when I say grain, it really applies to things like wheat, but also to pseudo cereals like buckwheat or amaranth or millet.
Right.
So each of these seeds have different components to them. There's the bran, there's the endosperm, and there's the germ. And each of these have very particular functions for the seed, but also have very specific nutritional content. And so when we stone mill, we are maintaining 100% of each of those three elements of the seed.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to more industrial processing like roller milling, where most of the time, the bran and the germ, so two of the most nutritionally important aspects of the grain, are sort of cast off. And in the case of quote-unquote whole wheat or whole grain flours, a lot of the times the bran is re-ground and added back into the flour powder. But often the germ is left out. And the germ contains a lot of volatile oils that once ground, you know, they become oxidized. And so they start sort of breaking down and going rancid very quickly, much like nuts, you know, do. Mm-hmm. So you have to really think about the short shelf life of those and proper storage. So a lot of times with industrial milling, that's left out because the product needs to sit on the shelf for an extended period of time.
Right, right.
And so it just lengthens the life of the product, but it compromises our ability to enjoy the flavor of and absorb the nutritional power of the whole grain.
Right. I mean, throughout the U.S., before industrialized wheat, we used to have mills in communities, especially like across the Northeast, where, you know, you could take your buckwheat or your emmer or whatever varietal you had and get it stone milled. But today, because of the industrialization, that infrastructure doesn't exist in the same way. And so getting right. access to these kinds of grains requires perhaps you have your own stone mill as a baker. Mm-hmm. Or maybe even work with a cooperative. But can you tell us where you source your grains from and what that looks like?
Sure, yeah. So I am really excited about the potential of this new grain economy to invigor and enliven communities that have really sort of seen a decline in the last 50 years. Because of, you know, post-industrial just decline. Or, you know, these rural communities that relied on a certain crop that no longer has commercial value. Mm-hmm. So I try to work with small mills that are working with farmers that understand their farming practices. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about knowing your farmer, it's knowing what your farmer is doing. That's really important. And so I like to work with mills that employ those practices of working directly with specific farmers. Because I feel like I can have, as a very small scale production baker, I can have a more impact
right.
that way. That said, I do try to source mostly in the Northeast because that's where I bake. And where I sell most of my goods, unless they're online cookie subscriptions.
Right.
but sometimes there are specific grains or specific flours that I'm just a sucker for because they're so delicious.
Like what? Tell us.
Well, there's a mill out in a cooperative and a mill out in Washington State called Palouse Heritage, and they grow and mill landrace varieties that are very specific to their region. And these are, you know, certain types of flowers that you can't get anywhere else, obviously, because they're so specific. And the flavors of these flowers are just, you can speak of them almost as you would speak of, like, a fine wine.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, you can describe very specific notes of flavor.
Right.
And so they have a flour called Empire Orange that when I make a whole grain chocolate chip cookie with it, it's just out of this world. And people will email, they'll taste this cookie, they'll taste the flour in this cookie, and they'll email me out of the blue, like, what did you make? And it's really, it's just a chocolate chip cookie, right? It's just
that is
flour and butter and chocolate and salt.
And butter, amazing, you know, grain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sometimes I will kind of give in to the not so local urges because I want people to be able to taste the grain, to taste the flour. That's very important to me. It's, flour is not just this vehicle for butter and sugar. It is something that has its own character and its own place within whatever baked good it is made into.
Totally. Right. That's so powerful to think about wheat, right? Like, to us, it's just like a singular, you know, product, but truly it has hundreds, if not more, varietals and in so many different forms. And
yeah,
I feel like you're the grain whisperer bringing out the magic and the flavor profiles while being able to tell a story about its origin.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, what we love so much about your work and your food. I mean, you know, we've had the privilege of trying some of your breads and cookies, and I think when you are used to run-of-the-mill bread from a grocery store, wherever, conventional bakery, and then you try one like yours that's alive, that has very distinct grains with origins, like it's just a totally different product, and you never want to go back to conventional bread. It's like night and day.
Yeah. No, it's the flour, the grain, it's alive. You know, it is a seed that has power. It has a life to it. And the last thing you want to do is to kill that power with, you know, processing. And you should be able to taste that when you have a slice of bread or when you have a you know, indulgent cookie.
Right.
That should come through.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's been fascinating learning about taste, and, you know, we've had the, you know, opportunity and privilege to taste lots of really amazing breads here in DC, which, you know, there are amazing bakeries that are using alternative grains as well. Mm-hmm. And I know you hinted at this earlier when you were talking about gut health and sourdoughs, but I'm wondering about your opinion on kind of the culture of dieting and carbs and gluten-free. So can you kind of demystify what it means to eat bread for your health as opposed to being really afraid of bread?
Sure. So you could think about it in a couple of different ways, but if you are, say, eating a piece of bread that is made with 100% of the grain, so all of the germ, all of the bran, and, you know, this grain has been grown in a way that maintains the integrity of the soil and was harvested with mindful practices and then milled with mindful practices, this is a completely different food source than, you know, flour that's basically just this kind of inert powder that's had things added back into it because the processing has stripped it down. So I think when we try to understand the way our bodies process food and absorb the nutrients, we forget that there is a very dynamic set of processes that happen within our digestive system that really rely on the full sort of palette of things that are available within that that food. So, you know, if you've taken away part of the milk of something, you know, if you've taken away part of the grain kernel, our bodies all of a sudden have a very hard time digesting that food source because we don't have everything available to us. So fermentation steps in and says, okay, our bodies don't have the ability to digest a lot of these things. So we're going to kind of implement this pre-digestion, or almost, you can think about it as having like a second stomach. Mm-hmm. So like ruminants, you know, they have multiple stomachs in order to process grains and grasses. And so fermentation kind of steps in and does that for us, which is a great way to kind of think about it. So we're sort of pre-digesting these things. And so when we have a properly fermented bread or properly soaked flour, then that's, you know, grown in a way that's good for us and good for the environment, then it's a completely different nutritional experience than something else. So all of a sudden, this becomes a very craveable food source and a very nutritionally dense food source that does not need to be avoided right. in anyone's diet. It becomes very exciting and has, you know, a place at the table again. So
awesome.
Yeah.
We are here for that. We are excited to talk to you more about fermentation. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. We're sitting with award-winning author Sarah Owens all about fermentation and bread. We'll be right back.
This is Arielle, co-host of Pineapple Radio. Today we're sitting with Sarah Owens, who's the author of Sourdough and Toast and Jam, two amazing books all about bread and pastry that's been fermented and made with whole grains. And we're sitting here in the studio with her. She's currently cutting up some of her homemade rye bread.
Smells amazing. Smells there's seeds everywhere, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. And we just, before the break, we were talking about the importance of fermentation and acting almost as like a, you know, first stomach in terms of digesting these grains. And I know a huge part of your two books and baking with whole grains in general is cultivating and using a starter. Mm-hmm. And you have a special name for it, I think, in your, it's like the hydration starter or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's changed names over the course of the last 10 years. Currently, I call it the Beast.
Okay.
It changes names, it changes genders, but it's 100% hydration. So hydration just refers to how much water is in either a starter or a dough.
Okay.
And so 100% hydration just means equal parts flour and water by weight.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been a he, it's been a she, it's been, you know, different series of Star Wars names.
Oh my gosh.
For those of us who may not have made sourdough, what mm-hmm. is a starter?
So technically speaking, it's just flour and water. But in the case of, you know, a sourdough starter, we are culturing or farming microbes that are naturally present all around us. I mean, we are up to 90% microbial beings. Some studies suggest, you know, it's 50%, others 90%. But so these microbes are all around us, but we are specifically farming microbes that are living on the flower themselves. So that's why it's so important to use really good flour when you are creating or maintaining a starter. Mm-hmm. And these microbes, they're both bacterial and yeast related, and they each have their own role within the process of bread baking. But the bacteria specifically are very much responsible for the digestibility of the starter. So when we're talking about a starter, it's really just flour and water, but it's this whole universe.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
That we're maintaining.
And yeah. It's something that once it's alive and you have it going, you keep it in your fridge and tend to it. It's almost like having a houseplant.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, I think, than some people think. There is, you do have to have this basic understanding of what it needs, like any living thing. But yeah, occasionally you have to feed it. It's better if you use it. Mm-hmm. But most people, even myself, I keep my starter in the refrigerator, and it's essential to feed it at least once a week if you're not using it. Obviously, the more you use it and the more you feed it, the healthier it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And you can maintain it with any type of flour you like. I go through phases, but currently I'm in a rye phase.
Okay. Hence the rye bread. Maybe uh-huh. we can taste that at this
Absolutely,
point.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. So pass these around. So this is a bread that I just recently... I included in the manuscript for my third book entitled Heirloom. And so more and more, I try to create recipes for people that are obviously going to be baking at home, but also recipes that, I want to produce for my community. And so a lot of people in Rockaway, where I live, they love the like dense kind of Danish style, Eastern European style rye breads. Mm-hmm. And so they're constantly asking me for these breads, which is very surprising to me because a lot of communities are used to more refined breads with refined flours. And so, I'm so impressed and so excited that people want this style of bread.
Totally. That's exactly what it reminds me of, like a Danish style bread.
Yeah, it's great with like smoked fish or really creamy cheeses.
So good.
So it looks like so the shape of a bread loaf, like your kind of mm-hmm. standard bread loaf. Yeah. It is darker brown mm-hmm. and beautiful crust, very seedy and nutty. What is mm-hmm. in here? Like sunflower seeds, walnuts, black sesame seeds?
Black sesame. There's a little bit of white sesame. It's actually pecans.
Oh, pecans.
I'm a big pecan lover. And same. I have a friend in southern Georgia that sends me these.
Oh.
I mean, these pecans, they're like small and they're fat and plump. And they're just so full of oil. You know, that oil can be such a delicious thing, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's in the grain or in a nut.
It's a delicacy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like deliciously, like it's got a little like chew to it, but it's also just like dense. I understand when they say like bread is food. I like never mm-hmm. really understood that until I tried baked good or like mm-hmm. breads like this one where it's yeah. like this feels like a complete meal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And not every bread I make is this dense
right.
or this chocked full of nuts and seeds, but this to me is like you said, what food should be.
Right.
This is a slice of this will get me through the morning.
Right.
With like a little lumna and or some wow. peanut butter or something on top.
Right.
This is it.
So, you alluded to this earlier, which is whole grain baking is having a renaissance today, mm-hmm. Whether it's on the like professional commercial level or, in people's homes. Mm-hmm. And you know, in DC we have Seilu Bakery, which is an incredible whole grain bakery that has their own stone mill on premises.
Amazing.
Wood-fired pastries.
Mm-hmm. Sub Rosa in Richmond, which is similar. Right. Here at the Lion Hotel, their pastry cook at A Rake's Progress in the coffee shop, the cup we all race for, she uses a lot of heritage grains and
Amanda Cook,
stone milling part. Mm-hmm. But for those of us who maybe don't have access to these places and want to start baking at home, you know, if they picked up your book, like what's like the easiest way to get started? Because like you do need a starter, but like how would you suggest someone gets into this game?
Yeah, so I'm actually self-taught. I did not go to, you know, pastry or bread school or culinary school. So it's possible. and, you know, I started with books. And I think you do have to choose a book that speaks to you and how you approach food in general. Sourdough is a great place to start. Toast and Jam is a little more abbreviated version. And Heirloom is going to be kind of a great place to start, but it's a little more advanced. So in terms of working with these stone mill flours, especially the landrace or ancient grains or the heritage grains, it's kind of a different set of rules because a lot of these flours are not standardized like store-bought flours are. And so it comes with a certain degree of... it comes with an attitude, actually, that of being very open-minded and a willingness to really engage all of your senses. So for somebody that's looking for, like, step one, you know, mix for it, you know, exactly 2 minutes, like, this type of baking is very different from that. It's very intuitive. So I think starting with a book that explains just the basic processes behind maintaining a starter and what, you know, types of flour you should get and where to get them is where you should start. And then having that mindset of, okay, you know, this might not go exactly the way I want it to, or I might not make the perfect loaf, you know, on the first try. That's just as important to the learning process.
So it's like, don't be afraid to experiment and...
Yeah.
Get your hands dirty. And
I think the getting your hands dirty is really important. And so I think taking a class sometimes, a lot of people are hands-on learners. And so either they need to repeat the process over and over again and keep a journal and take notes about what worked or what didn't work. Or a lot of people learn a lot better through a class. So doing it through a guided experience with other people that are, you know, having the same experience is extremely helpful.
And you teach classes in Rockaway as well as also do like workshops abroad. Can you tell us about maybe two that are coming up that we could sign up for?
Yeah, so I'm actually, this is kind of kicking off a 2-month spree of teaching and consulting. So I will be doing some teaching in Rockaway in my bakery studio that's located in a sort of mixed-use communal building called The Castle. And that's where I hold both introductory and advanced courses. So the introductory courses are really more about, like, we're going to create a starter together, and I'm going to explain to you, you know, what the bacteria really does and what the yeast do. And then we create a loaf together and bake it together.
Amazing.
The advanced classes are a little more about the heirloom grains and local. I use flour mostly for main grains. And then I am kind of setting off and doing some workshops in other places as well, including I'm actually participating in a workshop. I'm not teaching, which is great, in Sicily. So I'm going to be learning about... sort of flowers that have been brought back to Sicily that originally were used in wood-fired baking. And then I'm going to be teaching in Greece and Oaxaca, Mexico, which is really exciting.
This year or next year?
This year. Okay. So in Greece, it'll be in October. It'll be sort of beginning mid-October. and then Oaxaca at the end of October. And the Oaxaca experience is really, I'm teaching as part of a three-day fermentation sort of congress or summit. So there's lots of different people teaching different types of things, from cheese making to chocolate, you know, making.
Sounds like
to
a dream.
Next to mall. Yeah, so it's going to be a really incredible experience. And of course, mezcal.
Yes. Of course. Oh, my gosh. I want to go to that so bad.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
We sadly have to wrap up now. We could talk to you for ages on soil, plants, grains, breads, fermentation.
Yeah.
I think what's so cool about this world, it's just like all interconnected. Mm-hmm. And thinking holistically about our health, about our land, you know, our farms and people. Yeah. It's really inspiring that that can all come through, you know, a delicious slice of bread.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. All right, before we hop off, we're going to do a very quick spitfire round.
Oh,
we want to get to know you a little bit more. Heads up for our audience, Sarah did not see these questions before, so we'll see what happens, but we're excited.
Okay.
All right, our first question is a woman you pine for in food.
Oh, my gosh. It changes so often, but, you know, currently there are so many amazing people, women in food right now, but currently I am going through a jam making phase.
Yes. We have a question about that in just a minute.
Okay. So, you know, toast and jam has kind of led up to this moment of, creating jams that are, you know, shelf stable and able to, reach to a broader audience than my local community, which is great too. So I'm really into making jams, and, June Taylor is somebody who probably doesn't know I exist, but I think she is, she just does it right. And I really admire people who stick to slow processes and, you know, really honoring ingredients, the integrity of ingredients. And I think she just does such a beautiful job of that. And it's very small batch, and, you know, it's just, they're beautiful. You taste every ounce of love that goes into every jar.
And she's in the Bay Area and like still womans her farmer's market stand. Yeah. I remember I was there last September and I was like buying my June Taylor jam and I was like, oh my God, that's her.
Yeah.
In the flesh.
So you answered our second question, which is your favorite women made food product. Maybe it's June Taylor jam or there's another.
Maybe right now. I also like seed and mill tahini. I'm a huge tahini fan.
Totally.
Oh gosh, there's just so many delicious things out there.
That's great.
Shout out to Seed and Mill. We love them.
Your go-to pantry and fridge item. So two different things.
Well, butter's got to be in there, obviously.
Yes.
And I've been making my own cultured butter, which is actually in Heirloom in the new cookbook as well. It's so easy and it's so obviously digestible, but the flavor is just incomparable, especially if you can source good and if possible raw milk.
Yes.
And so a lot of times I'll do horticulture consulting upstate, and there's access to raw milk. You can buy from farms, directly from farms. And so when you make butter, cultured butter from that, it's just phenomenal. So it's like the perfect spread for a good bread.
Great. Salivating.
Yeah.
Cool. So for our last question, we are very big fans of you. For some of our audience who may be discovering you for the first time, where can our audience find you?
Yeah. So I'm definitely on Instagram.
Yes.
At Sarah, S-A-R-A-H underscore C underscore Owens. And soon I'll be launching Ritual Fine Foods on Instagram and also on a new website. So that's coming up. For right now, classes, bread, subscriptions, that sort of thing are all located on bk17bakery.com.
Awesome.
And eventually when you go there, you'll be directed to Ritual Fine Foods.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Get her whole grain cookie box. It is the jam.
Yeah, that's coming up. I'm actually taking a little bit of a break until the holidays. But holiday cookie baking will be in full force.
Okay. Maybe we can be your little elves, workshop elves, helping in the corner.
Totally down. Yeah, you guys will get a huge box of cookies and jams.
Oh my gosh, literally my dream is being in a world of your breads and cookies and butter and jam. So
come to Rockaway.
Yes, we will.
We'll come visit.
Well, thank you so much again for joining us here in DC. Next time in Rockaway.
Yeah.
And thank you all for joining us on radio. Seek out, baked goods made with heritage heirloom grains. You know, talk to people at bakeries and restaurants and friends about this. You can source a lot of these grains yourself. Sometimes farmers at your farmer's market will have them, or like even the bread stands at your farmer's market. Mm-hmm. They may not sell grains there, but if you ask, they'll do it special order. Mm-hmm. So get into it. Start asking questions and tasting for yourself the difference, because it will seriously change your world, and you might feel better too when you're eating breads and stuff.
And before we sign off, if you're listening from DC, we have an event coming up on September 25th all about alternative grains and heirloom grains. It's featuring Amanda Cook from A Rake's Progress, Jessica Aziz from Selu, which is the local bakery that has amazing breads, and also Sub Rosa Bakery. So please come. You can sign up at pineapplecollaborative.com and hope to see you there.
It's called Against the Grain.
Yeah.
Atara and I will be there eating all the amazing bread.
Eating and talking.
So
come
exciting.
Meet us.
And please share your feedback on this episode. You can DM us on Instagram. Please leave a review on iTunes.
If you do, we'll read it live. So please leave a review if you like
only
it.
If it's 5 stars, though, guys. Come on. I'm just kidding. But thank you again for all of you for joining, and we'll see you next episode.
Hi there. You're listening to Pineapple.